This is CliffCentral.com.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Morning, Poppy.
Hello. Hi. Wow, what was that?
Yeah, that's the intro theme. I need a new computer. I've been sitting here for the last couple of minutes watching a spinny beach ball of death. But here we are. It is Monday. It is the 9th of July, and I'm very excited about this whole week. You know why?
Why?
Well, I've got about 73 reasons. Where should I start? Gareth and Sia get back tomorrow.
Okay,
so
sure.
They are currently in transit.
Yeah.
So they had their last day of London, and Gareth had his last few pics on the Instagram, and they should be landing relatively shortly.
Okay.
To which Sia's going to go home. He's going to get into his robe, into his slippers, and he's going to fall asleep like a 60-year-old woman while chomping on chocolates and watching something on TV. And then Gareth will then, he'll also fall asleep for about the whole day. But yeah, they're back. And today I also get to sort of be happy about the fact that I finally won a bet in sport. Yeah, there's that. You might have heard about that, Poppy. And we have a full show involving quite a bit of financials today.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm going to need to cough up eventually, so I might as well.
What's this? I need to cough up eventually. Is this a plan you have? You make bets and then you try to forget them?
No, I didn't try. I remembered and then I forgot this morning. So actually, I was like, oh my gosh. I blocked it out. I blocked out my loss. Our loss. Russia's loss.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. We'll obviously get into sport during the sports feature, but that there was far too much stress in that game. And the fact that it had to go all the way to penalties, I think it was more than both of us encountered or kind of envisaged was going to happen.
Dude. And it was just, I was done already by like the 89th minute that Russia scored? I was like, oh, well, it's over. And then, lo and behold, geez, that goal.
Yeah, it was quite something. But the Russia, look, I just thought the whole time round, it's a fair bit of match fixing going on here. But Russia, to their credit, they played bloody well over the weekend.
They did play well.
Like, it was a really good game.
I still think there was definitely a bit of match fixing. I think that they didn't plan to go all the way to the penalties. And that's what screwed them.
Well, there was I reckon it was their only chance because Croatia, I still think, are the better team. But we'll get into that sport. What you do need to look out for today, which you are going to be excited about today, is we've got Anthea Gardner. She's coming in. Now, Anthea, of course, is our resident finance professional. But we've also then got Joe Camino coming in. Now, Joe is a financial fitness guru. So this is a guy who's been known to chop credit cards to pieces. He's actually, last time he was here, Bobby, he had a hat, and on the hat are just small credit cards, like chopped up pieces.
That he's picked up along the way?
No, so he's hardcore when it comes to like getting out of debt and making sure that you financially fit and ready and all this kind of stuff. He's a really, really interesting guy, so he'll be coming in around sort of 7:30-ish. We've got Rich Mulholland at 7:45 for the reality check, and then yeah, by that stage, you'll be going like, wow, guys, that really was an incredibly good show. And I know. And then Gareth and Sia will be back. And then that's how everything's going to work. That's how today's going to work. Then we're back to usual on this week, from Tuesday all the way through to Friday.
Yes, Lord.
Yeah. And as I said, we are into that second week of, well and truly second week of July. And I know it's an age thing, and I will be the first to admit that.
What's going on?
Winter. I lost the will to actually be a productive human being this weekend. And I know it's everywhere in the world, every single year, it's like, yes, it's cold, it's winter. But our bodies don't seem to like it. But I don't know. Like, for the first time in my Joburg life, I'm second-guessing the place because I felt there was nothing to do this weekend. I felt uninspired to do anything. I did not want to go outside. I did not want to then, like, binge TV either. I just felt in between. It was such a disheartening kind of feeling. And there's only like one football match a day, two football matches a day, and that was just for those 2 days.
Dude, waiting for the soccer is the worst.
I mean, I was so... I almost watched Super Rugby. That's how bad it got. That is how bad it got. I did actually watch a movie, so we watched Jungle Book, like the latest version.
Oh, it's awesome, hey?
Because I didn't have a childhood, so I didn't see Jungle Book, and it was great. Interesting story.
It's amazing.
Spoiler though, the tiger dies at the end, and I didn't like that. I think the kid could have died. I mean, all things considered, he did start the fire. And yes, I know the elephants put it out. But I think one more tiger in the world, one less child. That's just me. Maybe that's why I should never watch kids. Kids thingies. Yeah, so, Poppy, that was the sum total of my weekend. It was hugely boring, actually. I haven't had a boring weekend in quite some time, but it's also okay. It's also okay.
I also think that's okay, especially with the weather. Yeah. Stay indoors.
And how did yours fare?
Pretty decent. I had a wild Saturday night. I drowned my sorrows after Russia left the World Cup and lost.
All right. That's a late sorrow drowner.
Yeah. It is what it is. I owe you money. I owe you 500 rand. Yeah. Thank goodness I didn't make any other bets. Remember what I told you on Friday when we made this bet? That whatever comes out of my mouth 9 times out of 10, when it comes to just like teams in general.
Yeah.
So like I'm really into my sport, but mm-hmm. I'm not a good luck charm. That's the problem. So if I say that, and I'm adamant that Djokovic is going to win a match, he loses. And he's my favorite tennis player at the moment and has been for a while. So you must always go against what I say. So.
Okay. Well, I did.
But look what happened.
But it's funny you say it because I know I'm a sporting jinx because most of my teams, they're dreadful. So I did this little experiment last year. Barcelona had won like, I don't know, 20, 30 games or something or other.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? I'm such a jinx. I'll support Barcelona. They lost 3 games in a row. It was the weirdest thing. They lost 3 games, but they lost to like average teams. So they got kicked out of the Champions League. They then lost a midweek game to some like goat-herding team from the south of Spain. It was
okay,
just
so
like
you know
that.
Where I'm coming from.
I know exactly where you're
coming from. Amazing. Thank goodness. So yeah,
it's not just you.
Good weekend otherwise. Very, very chilled and kind of, what weekends are supposed to be in winter. Cuddles and soccer and life.
Nice. So with the World Cup happening, there's a very interesting sort of talking point that I wouldn't mind picking up when Gareth gets back.
Mm-hmm.
Gareth's more obviously attuned with this whole political stuff. And I feel like if I try again to do deeper, serious conversation in this hot seat, that I'm not doing the topic as much justice. But Vladimir Putin, we're talking about how the fact that he's kind of orchestrating what's going on in this World Cup. And he is like a Bond villain, and he is a lot more sort of sinister than people believe.
Mm.
And the fact that he's kind of, I mean, he owns Russia. Basically,
yep, it's his.
It's a staggering feat that some guy can create so much control. And like we see it elsewhere, like that Ötegal guy is basically trying to take over Turkey. Yeah, Turkey's a very powerful country. People forget mm-hmm. that. But it's a huge power base in that sort of Europe into Asia kind of area there. I mean, they're part of NATO. They've got a lot of troops. There's a lot of power there. And there's a guy who's basically got it. By the balls, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get Vlad. And Donald Trump, obviously, there's a lot of headlines around him. People, unfortunately, whether you hate the guy or like the guy, that's not important right now. The problem is that there's too much, I don't know, like a circus around this guy.
Sure.
And I think a lot of the time, people like Vladimir Putin are sitting back and laughing because they're capitalizing all the sideshows that are going on. So when Vlad decided that he was basically going to just like buy the town of Sochi, and when I say buy, I very much mean that he basically turfed up a whole bunch of people and told them to go live elsewhere because he wanted a ski resort, he wanted the Winter Olympics, he wanted to posture, he wanted to show that he's a world power.
Yep.
He also put drugs into all his athletes, but I mean, that's just a different story which you've been through enough times now. But he is using this World Cup so brilliantly. Donald is floundering right now when you think he's got this upcoming state trip to, I think it's England. I'm not sure what
mm-hmm,
it is.
Mm-hmm.
The Brits being the Brits, of course. I heard that they're trying to get Green Day's American Idiot on the charts. So when he arrives, that'll be the number one song.
Ah, that's a tune, though.
It's pretty funny, yeah. So, well, Donald sort of flounders all this kind of stuff. And obviously people want to attack him at any given stage. I mean, Donald can do the most perfect thing in the whole world for everybody. And you'll get his detractors basically calling him out and saying this guy is basically Hitler. I mean, we've gone through this, the hysteria before. Angela Merkel's losing her rag as well in Germany. So she had a sort of power base there. She looks like she's on the way out. So Vlad looks around and he goes, I am king of the world. Now he's got the FIFA World Cup, which means he's got like the best toy in the world. And then North Korea's denuclearizing, well, technically speaking, because Donald went in there and had a chat with the man-child. So he looks around and he goes, I'm kind of in charge here, and the World Cup's the best thing for me. Everyone loves Russia right now because I've got the gift of football.
And he's doing well.
But you can see why. Now, there was this, I spoke a couple of weeks ago about this amazing article that I read around how Russia got the World Cup, how Qatar got the World Cup. So Vlad's been planning this for quite some time. It wasn't much like a, hey, we like football, let's get the football tournament. No, no, no. Everyone loves football. Everybody wants the football tournament. But not everyone is Vlad. You can literally hold a submarine to your head. I mean, we passed the stage of holding guns. And this guy will say, this is how it's going to be. So when you think like it's, I know it's great that England are getting caught up in this, it's coming home malarkey about them reaching the semis and stuff. But England were essentially meant to be hosting this World Cup. And I'm not saying because they're entitled or because it's their privilege or whatever it is, but they had a really good bid. When it comes to a footballing nation, England are pretty much up there. I mean, the English Premier League, you don't have to change anything. You can just say, right, we'll have the World Cup there tomorrow. Cool. Plug into the Premier League stadiums.
It works.
First world infrastructure. You've got everything you need from a logistics standpoint to host a great World Cup. Russia was very much an outlier here. It was never going to be a real contender. But then Vlad wanted it, so Vlad got it. And we all know how FIFA tumbled like a deck of dodgy cards after that. But then I was thinking, so we've got this ultra Bond villain, and who knows? I mean, like, another thing about the whole Sochi games was to detract from the sort of invasion of Crimea, Ukraine, all that kind of stuff. So everybody was watching the Winter Olympics and going, oh, look how cool Sochi is. Meanwhile, Vlad was sending troops into places. Now, with all this sort of attention around Russia in a positive light right now, who knows? He might then carry on with this invasion. He might try to steal some other stuff. Yeah, might happen. But then I was thinking, and something that Gareth's been saying for the last few years, is that there's actually never been a safer time to be in this world. And the fact that everyone talks about the fact that, oh, Donald Trump's going to lead into a world war. Wars don't really happen anymore. Sure, there's skirmishes and there's conflict and there's nations that don't like each other. And what it comes down to is that if you look at the First World War, Second World War, what were they fighting over essentially?
What were they fighting over?
Land. They wanted to take other people's countries, like physically, I want your
invasions,
country.
Invasions, yeah.
Massive invasions, massive lands. Like, it was this whole ideology around we must now expand who we are. I mean, basically, it's colonialism light. But it all comes down to that. So I found this really great clip. As you know, I'm a huge fan of the news behind the news, which is the Vox YouTube account. And they just got so much interesting stuff, which I've got like lined up for you for the whole week if we do have gaps, because there's something about this channel which obviously we can't ever match, is that all we want to do here on this channel is give you the best when it comes to informing you, entertaining you. But this team, like, it's a proper team of people who put together these videos. They research the stuff and they've got amazing records. But this is just why war doesn't happen anymore, which I found really, really interesting. Let's put that up.
So if you read the headlines, it kind of seems like the world is a terrible place, full of violence, despair, and war. But it turns out, war is actually declining. We live in the most peaceful time in human history. There's lots of reasons why, but here's three of the biggest ones. First, the spread of democracy around the world. International relations scholars have found consistently that democracies don't fight wars with each other. Now, why is that true? There might be plenty of reasons, but one big one is that people who live in democracies think it's wrong to start wars with other democracies. They're legitimate governments. It's wrong to attack them. But there's a flip side to this. Democracies do often fight wars with autocracies. Luckily, most of the world's countries are democracies now, so the democratic peace is probably making the world a much more peaceful place. Second big reason why war is declining is nuclear deterrence. Nuclear weapons, obviously big and scary. However, nuclear deterrence may have prevented a devastating war between the United States and the Soviet Union. Everyone recognized that they would lose. Statistical evidence suggests that that is true. That is, that most countries are too scared of the consequences of nuclear war to fight one. There is a dark side, and not just the risk of global annihilation from an accident. If a country gets nuclear weapons, they feel rather safer in being aggressive in little ways, you know, small conflicts or bullying around their non-nuclear neighbors. This weird paradox that nuclear weapons make the world more violent and more peaceful at the same time is called the stability-instability paradox. The third reason that wars declined has been the spread of the idea of national sovereignty. This idea is hundreds of years old. The idea that you shouldn't interfere inside the borders of another state. But people didn't take the idea too seriously because stealing new land used to be a major cause of war. Think American and European colonialism or World War II. But after World War II, nations pledged to stop. Since 1976, there hasn't been a single successful war of conquest, except for maybe Russia and Crimea really recently. Again, though, sovereignty is a flip side. Sometimes governments go to war against their own people, and poor, weak governments often collapse into civil war. Sovereignty makes it hard for the international community to intervene to stop either of those kinds of wars. But on the whole, when you see those terrible headlines, remember, the world's way better off than it ever has been. There's less war and less violence than almost any other time in human history. That's something worth celebrating.
It is, and if any of that was to change, it's going to come from Russia. That's where I was going with the whole story.
Oh.
We can identify who our threat to, I think, the world is going to be. And it's, they'll probably come from there. That one guy. Yeah, there's my history.
Vlad was even trying to do some stuff here.
Well, I mean, obviously, I think he owns a fair few of the politicians around here, which is another reason why it's good to talk about Russia, because we might have to speak it at some stage.
Wow.
Well, it's put two and two together. As I said earlier, Joe Camino's coming in the second hour, and this guy, if you've got any doubts about what it means to go into debt and the evolution of credit and buying cars on residual, this could be, whenever Joe comes in here, I feel it's it could be depressing, but at the same time, it's massively informative. And, mm-hmm. You know, like Anthea was saying last week, that, you know, interest rates are about to rise, all that kind of stuff. It's not a good time to be in debt. It's never a good time to be in debt, least of the months, least so right now. So, you know, there's many things that we can't bury our head in the sand about. And, you know, if you have bad credit, we have bad debt. You add up all the different years before you know it, you really are in a bit of a hole. And Joe's going to talk about home loans, the car loan, the credit card, furniture loans. He's got, he said his prep through, and there's a lot going on here. But he's like a Tasmanian devil of finance when he does come in here.
Okay.
It's really, really quite interesting. We've been trying to keep up to date on this, the boys in the cave, the Thai football. Sorry, we're having some issues with our messages screen at the moment.
It's okay. I'll update you at 6:30. Our boys.
Yeah. Sorry. There we go. I think I might have.
Everything's just not working. It's a Monday.
No. It's. I sit down here and I've literally got to pull a rabbit out of a hat, but I don't have a hat. The screen is just, I don't know what's happened. So we can't see your messages right now, but I'll try to rectify that as quickly as I can. See, you can see it's
wow.
Not me.
Wow.
It's a signal issue. So we have had some more positive news that we can update you on the Thai, the football thing. Now, I don't know if you've been reading much about the story, but you know, like when these big stories break, these big news networks, what they do is that they create diagrams and they create like different sort of behind the scenes aspects of mm-hmm. this. And that whole cave situation is actually, it's mind boggling to think that everyone's probably saying, well, why were they in the cave in the first place? You know, people were saying like, how could their coach or their parental guardian, whatever,
25-year-old coach, yes,
lead them into the situation. But when you look at it, it's a very innocent mistake.
It is.
It's a very...
In hindsight.
In hindsight. A very complex cave network. And with water levels and sort of fluctuations being what they are in that part of the world, you can kind of understand why. But I don't know if you've ever been to the Kango Caves in Otsun.
Mm-mm.
Okay, if you're ever in Otsun, you'll do one of two things. You'll go to the Kango Caves or you'll go try ride ostriches.
Otsun is not how late in the Karoo.
It's hot. Western Cape, Karoo-ish, yeah. And if you look at the different cave networks there, so you can go and it's incredible. You learn about stalagmites and stalactites and then these different sort of chambers you can climb through. And there's a mm-hmm. place called the Post Box where air gets very thin. You don't want to go there on a hot day with sweaty people. But when you start understand how these caves work, you can kind of understand what's lying ahead for these divers. Mm. And what does make it all the more difficult, of course, is completely dark. So they've got the last few days, they've had to map all this kind of stuff out. They've had to understand the use of oxygen tanks, spatial awareness, all these kind of things. So there's a reason why it is taking as long as it is, and there's a reason why these kids went in the first place. So I've been really up on the story of the weekend. Absolutely fascinating. At the same time, hugely, hugely scary.
Very scary. I think for me, the crazy thing is that even the people that are doing the rescue, the divers, this is a risk for them and yep. their lives, and they're basically going to save someone or other people's lives, but also risking their own lives at the same time. So there's no like showcase. You know, sometimes rescues are like, cool, you're going to get on top of the roof, save the person on there, we're both going to be okay. There's just so many things that could go wrong if they panic. And yeah. as someone, and I'm sure you are too, like a seasoned swimmer, even if, like I was reading on the net as well, people were commenting and they were saying they dive, but they don't know that they would be able to survive a situation like this themselves. So can you imagine these kids and these divers? Yeah, it's just so many things, so many dynamics to this rescue operation that I just hope everyone's going to come out okay.
Yeah, speaking about another rescue operation, someone's agreed to marry Justin Bieber.
Who? Hailey Baldwin.
Who is Hailey Baldwin?
His current bae.
I'm looking at pictures here. This guy is like Macaulay Culkin, just with, I don't know, a better facial structure.
Definitely Macaulay Culkin.
Like, we often talk about child stars, and it really is quite something. But Bieber looks like he's just got off the rails. He used to be quite a clean cut, like he had his stuff together, but he keeps getting dodgy tattoos. He just looks like a kid who literally has been abandoned by his parents, but is also given $50 million.
Yeah, I think Bieber's going through it. Hey. Bieber's just living his 20s. He's in his 20s now. I think he's just trying to be normal, guys.
You reckon that's what it is?
Yeah. He's overcompensating for the life that he isn't living, if you know what I mean.
I mean, it's interesting, Steve, because you are simplifying matters, because when you look at it, you got to look at someone's age, and then it does tie back to that. But, okay, so he's 24.
Yeah. He's old. Jeepers.
No, but like, okay, 24 is young.
It's young, but it's old.
That's a year older than Sia, and he's getting engaged now. So a couple of things happen when you've just thrown yourself at life way too hard, which is unfortunately where his career is done. You find Jesus, which I think he found last year. You get into drugs, which I'm pretty sure he's had a devil with, or you get engaged. You're constantly searching for this thing that's going to right the ship, so to speak. It's going to like basically get you together and anchor you.
Sure.
I mean, we've seen it over and over with these stars. Mm. So Hailey Baldwin is a model.
Yes, she's part of that whole model clique with Bella and Gigi Hadid. All of those girls, they're like the cool girls to be and to hang around with.
Is she Alec Baldwin's daughter?
I think niece.
Stephen Baldwin.
Yeah.
Okay, so which are
but they're still related, I think.
Which of the Baldwins is Stephen?
Hey, my man, he's a Baldwin.
I know there's like 83 Baldwins, but which one? I mean, you get Alec, and then there's, after that, they're just the brothers. They're just known as Baldwin brothers after
Alec. No one cares after that.
Clearly. Okay, so Bieber's marrying into the model clique.
Yeah, it works for him. I actually quite like this girl. I think she's decent. Like, she's hardworking. She doesn't really like the limelight. Like, if it comes, it comes. She's not like sucking for the fame, but I guess she's there already. It's a lovely girl. And she's hot.
Yeah. Well, yeah. 8 months. I'll give it 8 months.
I like her better than Selena. I said Serena. Serena.
Yeah. I don't think Justin could ever handle a woman of such stature. Right. Sorry. I still haven't got the message screen on. I know you're all dying to share your stories from the weekend. That's me just...
Jeez, you are banging that thing.
I was just moving the mouse.
Moving the mouse.
Yeah, on Friday, we brought you the letters from the Cussy Tops, and they, of course, were so keen to have a chat with us. Well, we're going to wait until Gareth and Sia get back. So, Cussy Tops, if you guys are trying to contact us again, we just thought that if you are looking to sort of seduce Sia as a client, or, you know, spread your letters like news and you know, the excitement around the WhatsApp group, there's no point just chatting to us. We need the full team to hear the full story. So we'll be chatting to the Cussy Tops this week as well. And of course, with all the different interviews that Gareth and Sia have been doing, there is so much content coming your way this week in the 8 to 9 slot. It's going to be really amazing. And Gareth is always in a better mood when he gets back from these trips. So you're in for a great week. Poppy, what are we in for today?
Oh, my gosh.
Five things that you need to know.
My technology is also malfunctioning here by me. But off the top of my head, so I don't know if you know about this March Against Abuse that government has put together, that they're hoping to kind of get
a march against themselves.
It's domestic violence and that kind of stuff. Yes. That the march is about, and they've roped in a very peculiar ambassador. Do you know the King of Kwaito, Arthur Mafakate?
Not familiar to me, no.
Okay, so he's basically the King of Kwaito.
And is he the face of the march?
He's the face of the march, but get this. This guy was accused of domestic violence a year ago or so, I think, by his then-girlfriend, Cece. And they're still kind of in court about this situation. So I don't understand why the government would do this. It just doesn't make sense. You would get a guy who's been accused of domestic violence to be the ambassador for the march. What are we marching against?
But has he been accused and
they're in court?
Has he repented or is he
kept quiet, like didn't say anything. She's the one that's been most vocal, saying she's going to get her justice in court. Like she's adamant that this guy.
Okay, so this is a great PR opportunity for this guy, because he'd be like, "Oh, it couldn't have been me. I'm leading these marches."
Well, we're like WTF, more like it. We just don't understand how. I don't understand how the government plays games like this with our lives. Firstly, and then wants us to take them seriously.
It's all they know, unfortunately.
And now who's going to come to the march? So now you're basically inviting abusers to come to the march, because that's what you're telling us, he's allowed to come.
Exactly. You're also cheapening the cause. So it's like, well, it's not actually that serious, because this guy's heading it up and, you know, we can all pay lip service to it, because, you know, Women's Month every year. Like, I have a big gripe with this.
Yeah.
It's Women's Month. It's such a token thing. It's like Secretary's Day. It's like Valentine's Day. You'll get politicians coming out on stage saying, "You strike a woman, you strike her," whatever. It's happening.
Oh, wow.
It's happening within their systems all the time. And these guys love this whole, we'll deal with things internally.
Yeah.
And it's not being addressed. It's just being acknowledged. It's like, I acknowledge this is going on. Okay, well, what's happening about it? Well, it's a complex problem. We'll deal with it in our own time.
I have a meeting tomorrow or Wednesday with government, and I've been waiting for this meeting like all year, and I think I'm just going to be like, here's a 101 on how not to play yourselves, like how not to score own goals, because I just don't understand why they had to go this way. It just doesn't make sense. Like, how is this Tumamina energy or vibes at all? Anyways.
But Poppy, this is the thing about government, is that they don't quite understand the rules. For them, an own goal is still a goal. So I hate to break it to you. As the person who just won a football bet against you, I'll keep the smarts coming.
Okay. Moving along to SARS and Tom Moyane.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be addressing a media briefing today on what's happening around his situation and his current state of affairs in terms of the SARS inquiry and his disciplinary hearing. I don't know what he's going to say, because there's not much to say besides that the one judge said he had no leg to stand on. So now what? I don't know. So look forward to a Tom Moyane presser. We will probably get some super elements where they'll tell us that the absence of the essence of presence is the presence of absence. Whatever that means.
And heads shall be nodded.
Heads shall be nodded. I'm sure you often hear this, and I'm sure Sia is the one that's always telling you that Beyonce is coming to South Africa. I don't know if I believe this yet, but there's renewed rumors now that they're going to bring her out.
Is it not enough that we get Katy Perry?
Wow.
Are people not
No, it's not enough. We've been wanting Beyonce in South Africa for a while now. So apparently she's going to come out as part of the Global Citizen Mandela 100 festivities. A whole bunch of artists are coming out. And the rumor is that Beyonce could be coming to South Africa. I'm excited for that. I'm not going to lie.
Sure.
And then what else? Oh, Ty Cave
wrap up for now. Apparently four boys have been saved. I don't know how they get the numbers wrong. So yesterday I was following Sky News and BBC and they said six boys had been saved. And I was like, yay, we're halfway there already within like 2 hours. And then they revised the number to four. I don't know who's counting. Clearly they're not Asian. But four boys have been saved, thank God. And the rescue operation continues. And like we said, we just marvel at the complexity in terms of this rescue operation. It's never been done before, and it's going to be quite something to watch and to witness.
So essentially how this works is that they've kind of ascertained who the four most fragile of the boys were, so they came on the pecking list. The divers have to go through this extensive list of chamber, canal, marshy situations. So you've got to walk, you've got to swim, you've got to climb. Whole big thing.
Got to slide.
You got so much going on here. So every diver has his own tank on his back, but then must also hold a tank for the kid, plus a breathing apparatus. So when they go through these tiny little chutes, they've got to swim with the tank in front of them with extended arms. Purely, there is no space in this one section.
I saw the infographic.
Yeah, so that's what's happened, and that's how they've got four. There was a break for about 10 hours because they had to then refill the oxygen tanks. And they had to kind of regroup. And because it's such an intricate sort of system of networks they've got to go through, it's not just about, okay, you go. Everything has to be planned to the exact second because there's no real wiggle room in this whole thing. So
and
that's why.
How long? I saw a bit of this on the infographic, but I wasn't sure what they were actually alluding to. So there's a 3 hour swim from the surface to the entry point of the cave, right?
3 hours.
Yes, that's what I saw.
Yeah.
So who's swimming for that 3 hours? Because I know that I ain't ready to swim 3 hours.
Well, it's your life depending on it, puppy, so you'll find a way.
But I'm just thinking, like, would you not fall asleep as like one of the kids? Like, 3 hours is a long time to be swimming.
That's what I said. Every single point of this whole rescue mission is fraught with danger, and it's a miracle this is going to happen.
Insane. Insane.
So, yeah.
That are it.
Well, we'll pick it up.
There was something else, but my iPad won't switch on.
It's okay, Poppy. It's okay. We can always pick it up in the second hour. We've got plenty of time today. We've got all the time in the world. just to start off the sports, look, do you want to talk cryptocurrency? And I know it's a feature that goes in between the sports and five things you need to know. I just don't know what to say about it.
I need a 101 on cryptocurrency. I'm gonna need someone to explain something.
Well, ask Anthea. She's a huge cryptocurrency fan. She was so keen when it came out, and she was such a massive. She's shaking her head and looking at me with devil eyes.
I was a bit. I learned something from the one interview that Gareth did last week. The Monero guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I learned like a few things there, but I don't feel like I could go and have like a full on DMC.
No, well, no one can. And that's half the appeal, I think. People needed to know a certain amount, and that's what got them into it. Not knowing the full amount is what made them naive enough to put money. I don't know. But if you are in the game, the last 7 days, Ethereum has gone up 6.4%. Hooray. And Bitcoin, that's gone up 4.7%. But I mean, when you're going up from, I don't know. I've got no enthusiasm for this. Anthea, you can come join us in the studio anytime you want. I mean, it's pretty much open here. So Anthea is obviously here on a Monday because she does the finance feature.
Morning.
Right here.
Good morning.
Yeah.
How are you?
All right, Anthea. Slight worry here. Our message screen doesn't work, so I can't even see messages. People want to get in touch with the show. They can't. So probably even if we're having streaming issues, don't know.
We know nothing.
Don't know.
We
feel like those the Thai boys in the cave. We are in this, but hopefully you can hear us.
Oh, can I tell you? I was listening to you on the way here, so I could hear you.
Yes,
in the car.
Oh, amazing!
Solid. Yeah. Okay, into the sport. Gianni Infantino has said that the Thai boys who are stuck in the cave are more than welcome to come to the FIFA World Cup if they are fit and available. Might think this is a PR thing, but he's saying that the world is wishing them well because obviously it's a football team, these kids, right?
Oh.
I mean, they weren't just cave enthusiasts. This is an actual, like,
they're soccer boys.
They're a little team of footballers.
Yeah.
And Gianni Infantino says, yeah, come along. If you guys can make it, it'd be really great to have you. All the best for the rest of the escape. And you've got until.
That's actually such a nice gesture.
You got until Sunday, kids. So crack on there and you can go to the World Cup final. Can you imagine the entourage?
How nice would that story be? Like, that'd be great. That's such a great ending.
Can you imagine, like, the game starts and you flash up to, like, the stadium and there are these kids, the kids that were involved in this cave thing.
Yes.
And then there's, like, obviously the divers and... And it'll be amazing. That'll be like the highlights of the World Cup final.
Well, four boys have already made it out.
Yes.
So four boys will be at the World Cup, I'm assuming.
Well,
if they don't want to be spending time with
their
parents.
Anthea, settle down. It's very insensitive.
The other parents are not going to let go.
It's like, yeah, screw you guys. I'm going to Russia.
They're seeing money bags already.
Okay, so the World Cup over the weekend, it was the quarterfinals. So we all knew that Friday was the big day and Saturday was like a little... less big, but it started off with France beating Uruguay. That was kind of expected because Suarez didn't have Cavani with him, and then from there the goalkeeper had an absolute howler. 2-0 France go through, and many people are saying that France are very much the favorites, but everyone's going like, oh, but what about Brazil? Well, Brazil lost after that, so very much looking at France now as the favourites. Belgium beat Brazil 2-1. Good game. The Belgian team finally kind of showing that the potential that the so-called golden era is meant to be all about. So that was your Friday fixtures. And with that, it literally became the European Championships after that. So the South Americans were gone. And of course, no team from Africa made it through that far. Then on to Saturday, and England beat Sweden. Again, no massive surprise here. Sweden they offer very little up front. They're a very defense-minded team, and this was no surprise to anybody. Of course, all of England then erupted into mass hysteria. It's coming home and all that kind of stuff. But it's all the Super Sport pundits who have been quite good. They've been quite outspoken throughout this whole tournament. As they all said, if England's not winning this thing 2-0, 3-0, they're really going to struggle after that. Struggle is exactly what Russia and Croatia did after that with each other. Croatia looked like they were going to coast through, and then suddenly Russia scored this absolute lightning bolt of a goal in the first half, and everyone's like, hang on a second, these guys actually aren't too shit after all. And it was just nail biting the whole way through. It went extra time, then Croatia got a goal in extra time, and everyone thought, okay, well, that's definitely it. And then Russia got another goal into penalties. It went, and unfortunately Russia missed their first penalty, and they just couldn't catch up from there. Croatia go through. Both knockout matches they've been in now, both going all the way to penalties. They are going to be absolutely knackered when they play the English. So that game will take place. So from here, we go to Tuesday and Wednesday. So kind of, I'm already set on these boys getting freed rather than the football right now. That to me is a bigger story.
Who's your money on, Ben?
The divers. No, it's going to be France. Look, whoever wins between France and Belgium are going to win. As much as everybody wants to see England get to the final, I'm pretty sure they will, because this Croatian team is going to be knackered. And at the same time, this Croatian team haven't really closed out the game so well. France versus Belgium on Tuesday, that's key for me, because, of course, then you got the team with an extra day off before the final to kind of regroup, let it all sink in. So France versus Belgium, 8 o'clock. That is on Tuesday. And then Wednesday, Croatia versus England, also 8 o'clock. English are pretty fresh. They've got to be. They've had a very easy run. That's not me being horrible. It's exactly what's happened. They've had an easy run to this final. And Croatia, yeah. So that's your World Cup. Not a lot more to tell you about the World Cup right now. Sorry, it's the story about the boys is the biggest story here. Yes, Poppy, do you want to say something?
No, I was about to say, I feel like that's enough.
Yeah,
we've been hearing about the World Cup.
Okay,
I've got a bit of World Cup fatigue.
Just so bitter because you lost that bet.
So bitter, done with life.
So
in fact.
Bitter. I tell you, also very bitter is the Sunwolves. They got absolutely hammered over the weekend by the Waratahs in Super Rugby, 77-25. Now the Sunwolves team, it's like Oprah's diet. It's good, it's bad. It's good, it's bad. I mean, like they beat like decent South African teams. When I say decent South African teams, obviously with the inverted commas there. But yeah, 77-25, the Waratahs hammering them there. Close to home, the Stormers beat the Sharks, 27-16. The Bulls beat the Hagawareth. Now, the Hagawareth were, I think, were well ahead in the beginning. The Bulls coming back there. And it's a big result for the South African Conference, because the Lions really needed this result to go their way in order to top the African Conference, because the Hagawareth were really closing in. The Hurricanes beat the Blues, 42-24. The Chiefs beat the Brumbies, 24-19. The Reds beat the Rebels, 37-23. And the Crusaders, far too strong for the Highlanders, 45-22. Now, this leads us to the final run of fixtures. This week is the final run of regulation games. And then it's into the extended, bloated playoff series. which everyone is massively excited about. It is the Tour de France right now. How about that? And there was already a crash. Yes, Chris Froome went down. And wouldn't you know it, he was up on his bike faster than any of the guys at the World Cup who have been half-tripped. Just goes to show you there's a big contrast in the sport right now. So if you're not into the football, or if, as Poppy said, there's just been too much, well then give the Tour de France a go. Interesting stat about the Tour de France. I won't tell you about the results or anything because it's so early days. No one really cares. But guess how many calories these guys burn?
How many?
A day.
Can I guess?
A day. Yes, Anthea.
2,750.
A day.
10,000.
6,071.
Holy.
6,071 is what these guys, let's not talk about the saddle sores, but they're burning like 6,071 calories. You know what they've got to eat in order to get those calories back? 3.6 Chipotle burritos, 6.9 Cinnabon rolls, 9.3 Burger King Whoppers, 21 slices of Domino's pizza, 24 Yum. Snickers bars, 32 jelly donuts, 58 bananas, 121 heads of broccoli, 242 carrots. If they were to get the calories back, that's what they need. So these guys are constantly eating. Yeah, they have to.
And burning.
6,071 calories a day. A day.
That's incredible.
Can you imagine eating all those Cinnabons?
Yeah.
Of course, they are elite athletes, so I wouldn't suggest going out there and eating all of that, saying, I can eat like a Tour de France rider. It's an energy kind of exchange. Into Wimbledon, and the women's draw has just been shot to shit in the last couple of days. I mean, all the big seeds are gone. Halep is now gone. Looking at the seeds, I think Pliskova. Pliskova is the top seed, and she's the seventh one. So we go into fourth round matches today, so it's going to be a big day at Wimbledon today. Now, obviously, in our first week of all these kind of things, it's a bit slow and all that kind of stuff, but there's been huge, huge amounts of seeds dropping out, but the series or the whole tournament starts a proper fourth round. Here we go. And Serena Williams is still in the mix there, so she'll be taking on Rodina from Russia. And if she wins that, then she's a lot of seeds knocking about. So this is a great time for Serena to come back and win this one. And I'm guessing, like I said at the start of the tournament, this could be her last Wimbledon. What an incredible way to go out that would be.
Why would it be her last?
Because she's got a kid now and she's like, you know, she's getting on.
Serena's going nowhere. You need to watch that video.
She's ruled the world.
She posted on Twitter.
When?
Where she's talking about, well, some journalist interviewed her, I think, after one of the matches and asked her how she feels about always being the one to beat. And she said, well, the one thing that she said that caught my attention was that she's always got to be, she's always playing everyone at their best. So she's always got to be better than them and beat them at their best. So she's got to be greater than the greatest because she's the greatest.
Oh, no pressure then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. No, obviously. But then
that's what makes her great.
But then put her on the couch with a Cinnabon and her kid and she'll be like, well, this is the greatest. Sorry, I don't care about tennis
she
anymore.
She cried even about missing her kid walked over the weekend and she said she was too busy training and she missed it.
Exactly. That's why she doesn't want to keep playing. Poppy, trust me on this.
No.
I might not be right about everything, but this kind of stuff I'm pretty good at. Okay. She'll stop giving a toss about the tennis thing quite soon.
Her mind drifted towards the last 16 tie against Serena Williams. She said, that must be really difficult being Serena Williams because everyone ups their game every single time they have to play her. What do you think? I mean, you have to deal with that every single time going on court knowing you are number one, the one to beat. Have you just got used to that now?
I'm glad someone admitted that.
She's already dozing off. She's
Madison does. She's
tired.
Just so smart and so on it. But yeah, every single match I play, whether I'm coming back from a baby or a surgery or it doesn't matter, these young ladies, they bring a game that I've never seen before. And it's interesting because I don't even scout as much because when I watch them play, it's a totally different game than when they play me. This is what makes me great. I always play everyone at their greatest, so I have to be greater.
She said it must suck to be you.
At first it did, but I like it because, you know, it kind of backfires as everyone comes out and they play me so hard, and now my level is so much higher because of it from years and years of being played like that. So it's like, you know what? My level has... If it wasn't high, then I wouldn't be who I am. So I had to raise my level to unknown because they're playing me at a level that's unknown. And so now I'm used to it.
Yeah, if there's any doubts why if Serena was the greatest, an answer like that kind of just confirms it.
Yeah.
She's not just physically on another level, mentally she's on another level. And that's one of the greatest sporting answers to a question. And if you keep bringing the fire, I just get more and more powerful. I'm sure there's like a Marvel line in there. Yeah. Seriously, the next thing they're going to take Serena's sort of monologue there, and they're going to put it into a superhero movie. Onto the gentleman side of the draw, Federer's still in. He'll be playing Manarino from France today. Bottom side of the draw, Nadal's still in. He'll be playing Vesely from an Eastern European country. Del Potro's still in. Nishikori's still in. Djokovic is still in. He beat that Kyle Edmund guy. So that was the end of the English charge, as expected. And, Djokovic was actually quite pissed off because guys were coughing and there was whistling when he was serving towards the end. Of course, they were so bitter that, come on, Kyle, wasn't going to progress. But I hate to kind of to tell you the obvious, though, Britain, that he was never going to progress. Kevin Anderson's still in the mix, too. He'll be playing Gael Monfils. So that is Wimbledon wrapped up. There's still a huge shit show going along with PSL's ruling over Ajax Cape Town. Are they going to get suspended? Are they in the clear? Of course, this is now down to FIFA. FIFA are a little bit busy right now with the World Cup and trying to obviously, get kids out of caves. So I don't see this ruling taking place anytime soon. What is worrying, though, is that the new league starts on August the 3rd. Today is the 9th of July. You do the maths and try to work out if this absolute catastrophe, this burning circus tent of a situation, can be resolved. It took them about 18 months to resolve the Pirates field invasions the other in the last couple of seasons. This is not going to go well for the PSL, and they might even be forced into taking 18 clubs where the current 16 number is. I have no sympathy for these guys. Badly run organization, badly run everything, and this is just going to come back and bite you. That's pretty much it for the sport for today. The Proteas have got off to a decent start in Sri Lanka. They're having a little warm-up match. They then take on Sri Lanka in Gaul. That'll be the first thing. Russell Knox won the Irish Open in a thrilling playoff against Grant Fox's kid. I forgot what his name is right now. Ryan Fox. And then Kevin Na won the Greenbrier. It was his first tournament win in quite some time. Absolutely blistered the field in the end. And Lewis Hamilton didn't win the British Grand Prix. Some Ferrari crashed into him and the other Ferrari won. There's your in-depth F1. Hope you enjoy it. Blah, 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 blah. Yep, I think I've covered everything. I think I've covered absolutely everything. And now we need to get into the finance. As I said to you today, a big day of finance because Joe Camino is also coming in and he'll be telling you all about your debt and your credit and all the other things that you should probably not have in your life. And that's what we do in this show. We bring up speed and everything and we make you live a better, more profitable life. I think that's how it should go. But now is for the full fat feature of Finance with Anthea. So every Monday morning, Anthea sends through her preparations for the show, but there's big talking points. I gotta say, when Justice Malata comes in here on a Thursday, he probably sends us about a quarter of what Anthea delivers. Anthea, good morning.
Good morning again, Ben.
Good morning, yeah. You see, if people just listen to this, then we started officially again.
Oh, right, okay. So Anthea, there is a lot to talk about.
There is a lot in your plate here again, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think, so markets, we're completely out of results reporting season at the moment. So markets are being driven by macro, corporate activity, and egotistical politicians, quite frankly.
Okay, so and all the big fundamentals of the world.
Last week, very shaky JSE and global markets. I think it's now official. The trade war has begun, the one that everyone was worried about. I mean, Trump has imposed $34 billion worth of import tariffs on goods from China. China, of course, immediately responded. And guess who else? Russia, for no apparent reason, jumped in on the action. They increased tariffs on yellow metals by 25% to 40%, and we saw Barlow World, which I think has about 15% exposure to Russia, down 3.5-4% on Friday. The other interesting thing that's happening about this trade war is that copper seems to be the almost bellwether benchmark go-to if you want to see what's going to happen to commodities. The metal was down $1,000 since closing at a four-year high on June the 7th, which is about when these talks of trade wars started. I mean, it is trading or was trading at $7,332 an ounce and now $6,000 and something. Although, you know, I always talk about how global markets impact on South Africa, and on Wednesday was Independence Day, and if you want an indication of what happens when the US is not around trading, volumes traded on Wednesday were down 36%. Local consumer stocks, so kind of your Pick and Pays, your Woolworths, your any retail consumer stocks basically, only traded half the average daily volume on Wednesday.
So, you sure this wasn't the World Cup as well, Anthea?
Who played on Wednesday?
Well, people trade less on World Cup days.
Maybe. I'll have a look out for that, Ben. I'll do some numbers for you. And then everyone, talking about foreigners, everyone's really worried about the number that came out last week, which showed that foreigners sold a net $39.2 billion of South African government bonds in the first 6 months of the year. I mean, this is the first time this number's been so big going back to the early 2000s. I want to put that in context because actually foreigners still own 40% of South African government bonds, which compared to 2006 when they're barely owning 9% is a lot. So they do still hold on our bonds. I don't think it's South Africa specific. I don't think it's because of our fiscal outlook now. You know, if it was going to be, they would have sold down all those bonds when we were getting downrated every second week to junk state, closer to junk status. Mm. What does surprise me about this is that I think South African bonds are currently very cheap. So your R186, which is your benchmark 10-year South African government bond, is trading at 8.7%, and that's off from 9.15% 2 weeks ago, really indicating that it's a buy. I mean, I would say, yeah.
Would you buy a government bond?
Yes, I would, actually, because the one thing the government can do, which your corporate can't do, and I know this is not a great strategy, but they can print money to pay you back if they need to.
Oh.
Yeah, so government bonds generally are considered safer, and I'm not talking about the Argentinian and Russian debt crisis at the moment, and you know, there's a whole lot of things going on here. Basically, buying a bond, the difference between buying a bond and a share in a company, if you're buying a bond, you're basically loaning someone money and saying to them, okay, well, I will lend you money, and in this case, the South African government, in this case, at 8.7% per annum. So they will pay you 8.7% per annum, and at the end of the period, they'll give you, hopefully, your capital back. Whereas with shares, there is the risk that the company will go under. Just look what's happening at Steinhoff. Actually, we should talk about Steinhoff.
That's what I was going to say. Segues nicely into them.
Because last week when I was here on Monday, we spoke about the fact that they released their results on Friday, late on Friday afternoon. So just before the market closed, nobody had a chance to have a look at it, analyze what was going on. And then last week, the share was up like 34% in one day. Wow. I think analysts suddenly realized that maybe this company will survive.
Anthony, would you have got people that would have gone in low, you know, after the shit hit the fan, December, Jan, around there? Would people have taken a sneaky little kind of position in that, knowing it's ultimately going to come back?
Yeah, such a great story. A friend, when this all happened, a week after the stock started plunging, a friend of mine phoned me and said, I've done the best thing. I've bought Steinhoff shares at 22 Rand. I was like, what makes you? He was like, it's down 50%. How can it go down further? There you go. So, do you know what happens to a share that halves? It can halve again and again and again. So be careful of trying to bottom pick.
Sure. But
it's,
I mean,
for monkeys, Ben. Another stock market saying.
But your stock market saying. You still need to have that book get released. Yeah, but still, there's enough in this whole cesspool that is going to kind of maybe bounce back a bit. Because 34%, that's...
Okay, so the share going up and down is just an indication of sentiment and speculation. Okay. And yeah, I would say...
These are not good investment words.
No. It's a difficult one to call, quite frankly. Hey, I saw there's a book. I was at Exclusive Books yesterday, and there's already a book out on Steinhoff. It was in Afrikaans, so I don't remember the name. But I can't believe someone's actually published already.
Was it Die Schritt Opfok? The story of Steinhoff. Right.
Yes. From small to great and back to small. We also had some macroeconomic data last week. PMI manufacturing data was released. I'm afraid it's not a good sign. Further contractionary month. So for May, it was down 1.9 index points to 47.9 compared to... in June, it was down to 47.9 compared to May's 49.8. This is really not great. Very disappointing, because what you want is an increase in manufacturing to help unemployment. I read a great thing yesterday on the weekend, which said politicians don't create jobs, entrepreneurs do.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, and I'm just going to go with that.
Politicians create jobs for their families. Maybe you should amend that slightly.
Yeah, you know, I knew my parents. Honestly, very disappointed in them for not being politicians. And then in company-specific news, Anglo Platinum said that they were selling Racimone to RB, Royal Bafokeng Platinum, for 1.8 billion rand, which is all very exciting and a huge deal, but it's pretty much in line with the strategy that Anglo American, which owns 78% of Anglo Platinum, said about 2 years ago, that they really wanted to get rid of non-core assets, stick with their core assets, and build on those. I mean, it's taken them a while to do it. And the other thing is that other mining companies have suddenly cottoned onto this. But the great thing about Anglo American is that I think they've executed particularly well. You know, they kind of looked at the commodities, seen where it was going, and said, this can't last forever. We're going to get rid of some of our less performing or worse performing assets, which is exactly what they did. And subsequently, their gearing ratio is down to 4.3% from 15.5%. This is, when I say gearing ratio, this is like leverage. This is your debt to equity. I mean, their debt to equity ratio is down 75% year on year. Basically, what I'm trying to say when I'm quoting all these crazy numbers is that they're just shoring up their balance sheet and really looking strong at the moment. I really like Anglo American at the moment.
Okay.
And while I'm talking about commodities companies, how are we feeling about this petrol price increase last week?
Well, we went into the actual breakdown about where all the money goes in this dodgy pie. And of course, we're all feeling disgruntled. We're feeling like we are being taken for a ride.
So to speak. An expensive ride.
That's the best four-letter word I could think of without sounding offensive.
I have an idea. If you are suffering from the petrol price, I think you should be buying Sasol shares. They're looking very cheap. And with Brent crude at about, what, $76, $77 a barrel at the moment, I think there's still quite a bit in it. So there you go. That's my stock pick for the week. Buy Sasol shares.
Very good.
Still staying with mining companies, Glencore released a SENS on Tuesday saying that they had received a subpoena from the U.S. Department of Justice to produce documents and other records with respect to compliance with the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act and U.S. money laundering statuses.
Ooh, that's not a great email to get, is it?
No, that is really not good. The company's lost $9 billion of its market cap following this announcement or letter from the Department of Justice. So really suffering. Then on, I think it was Thursday or Friday, Thursday, they came out saying that they were doing a share buyback. And share buybacks are normally good. Like, you want the company to come to you and say, if you don't want to hold on to your shares, we'll buy them back. And they generally tend to offer you a small premium. But I don't know if I want to be owning Glencore shares at this stage. It's very worrying.
Hasn't it been a couple of interesting sort of years for that? Like, they haven't exactly been going up. It hasn't been showing a great trajectory.
No, and again, they haven't taken advantage of the commodity bull run, right? So it's always a problem. Like, South Africa hasn't taken advantage of the global economic upturn, unfortunately for them. Yeah, So commodities are a difficult one, very difficult one to guess, because you don't know what's going to happen. And with these trade wars, I think everyone's really worried that it'll bring trading economic inter-country trading kind of to a standstill, not to a standstill, but it will definitely subdue it. And when that happens, you'll see lower economic growth and lower commodity prices.
Which is, all bad things, really.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I say that, and I've just called Sasol a buy, but the difference with these commodities like platinum, gold, silver, copper, is that in Sasol's case, the current oil price is actually not priced into the share price. And in fact, if you go back and do all the numbers, and I'm not going to bore you with all the numbers, but they've got this project in the US called Lake Charles, which basically you're getting for free. And so once they start producing, which they will very shortly, or producing more, you're likely to see a run in the Sasol share price.
Nice.
And then we should talk a bit about banking shares. Two banks in the news. Capitec, the first one, hit the news on Tuesday saying that there was a story that said the Reserve Bank had ordered an investigation into Capitec fees. And the fees situation, and you remember Viceroy?
Yes.
These guys who brought out the Steinhoff.
This consumer watchdog people that were really pissing people off.
They were actually just hedge fund managers talking their book, quite frankly.
well said.
Anyway, so they put out a report on Capitec, and the Reserve Bank stood up for Capitec and said they're not doing anything wrong. We're checking them. Then the story breaks last week that the Reserve Bank is investigating Capitec's fee structure. Capitec come back and say, well, actually, we know nothing about this investigation. The Reserve Bank deny claims of the investigation. A day later, it is discovered that the Reserve Bank are not investigating Capitec, but they did tell the National Credit Regulator to investigate Capitec. I mean, talk about splitting hairs. Anyway, it's not a great one, because the story with Capitec is that they were rolling loans. So they would lend you money. If you were unable to repay the loan, they would reinstate that loan and say, don't worry, we'll give you a new loan. Take the money from the new loan to repay the old loan and start repaying the new loan, which your bank can actually do, mm-hmm. but the limit is 3 times. And Capitec was very much at that limit.
Oh, right.
And the problem then is every time they reinstated this new loan, they would charge you. So you know there's loan origination and initiation fees and all those nonsense.
Processing taxes and fees, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so Capitec were doing that and charging their clients for the new loans every time. So that's what the Reserve Bank really once investigated. I kind of sighed a sigh of relief, to be honest, because my concern, which the Capitec report had pointed out, the Viceroy report had pointed out, was that Capitec didn't actually have enough reserves. And when a bank doesn't have enough reserves, that's a big issue. And that's a nice segue into the next bank I want to talk about is VBS, mm-hmm. Mutual Bank.
I was
bank.
About to ask.
That's
a dog excuse show. My language.
Yeah, thank you. I was going to go with a four-letter word on that. That's okay. A dog show. So Treasury have had to step in and basically guarantee depositors' money. So I remember in 2009, I think it was, post the global financial crisis, in the UK, government stepped in for Northern Rock because there was a run on the bank, and they said, if you had money in the bank, because the bank doesn't actually always hold your cash, right? So if you give a bank a deposit, they don't sit on it and do nothing with it. Mm-hmm. They unlend it to somebody else for a higher interest rate, and that's how they make the money. The difference between what they're lending money out and what they're paying you in interest is how the bank makes their money.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you come back to them and say, well, I want my money today, they're hoping that I've deposited money that they can then give you.
Sure.
And so the merry-go-round goes. So VBS last week, there was a big drama about depositors queuing for their money. And of course, with VBS, there was the initial problem was the liquidity mismatch. So this not having enough money to repay, and the fact that the municipalities had deposited all this money. Yesterday, I think it was, or Saturday, in the news, it came out that VBS had actually paid the PIC to fast track a loan to them, and that somehow 5 million rand has disappeared. I mean, that's like one of many. I mean, yeah, the point is, roundabout way of saying that VBS currently not very stable. People, depositors are queuing for their money, And the Reserve Bank has gone to National Treasury and said, please, can you secure people's deposits for up to 100,000 rand? They had previously done it for 50,000 rand. It's now 100,000 rand. So if you are deposited with VBS, at least know that up to 100,000 rand of your money is safe.
Okay, I was going to ask, but you mentioned quite a lot of money, so it must be people with money that would have...
No, it's actually your ordinary bankers.
Really?
So the big issue are the municipalities who were not supposed to be depositing their money there.
Sure.
But they also do take retail money. So people like you and me, they'll happily take our money. I mean, obviously.
Wow.
And those are the people that the banks are worried about, that the Reserve Bank's worried about. Yeah. Because if basically VBS doesn't have money to repay
anyone.
Yeah.
All right. Anthea, does that bring us a close to what we need to know about finance?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. One last thing, maybe, that the U.S. added 213,000 jobs last month.
Damn this Trump, what an evil prick.
Yeah, the unemployment rate rose, though. Excuse me. It was up from 3.8% to 4%. And there's us with our wider unemployment rate of 37%, I believe.
But with a much smaller population.
Yes, but percentage of.
Yeah. All right, well, that's Anthea's Money Shot for this week. You can catch all her features on the cliffcentral.com website. Anthea, have you had a prosperous week?
Oh, thank you. That's the best thing you could wish me.
Oh, okay. I'll use that line again. Easy win. And we'll be back in our second hour. Gareth and Sia will not be joining us today in any form, shape, or way, but they will be home tomorrow, basically in studio. That's what I'm saying, their home is they'll be in studio tomorrow.
Yes.
And we can catch up on all the different stories. We've got Joe Cimino coming in the second hour. We've got Rich Mulholland with his reality check. And we've got a couple of stories. And looking forward to bringing it to you in a bit.
This is CliffCentral.com.